Local announcements. I believe I have prepared a sermon for this afternoon because I'm feeling it, and I believe all of you are feeling it. Prices have risen, and salaries haven't been keeping up. It's commonly called inflation. Inflation has been around since the world began. But hyperinflation and rampant inflation has not. But it does come around in certain cycles, and there are certain reasons for this. Our inflation here in the United States of America has risen from 2019, a rate of 1.8% per year. Anything below 2% is considered reasonable and good, to almost 9% now. The annual inflation rate is now almost 9%. I don't know how many of you, maybe some of you, have received pay raises to equal that rise in inflation. I have not. My son was complaining to me. He's an engineer in San Diego. He was visiting us last week, and he was complaining to me that a lot of engineers got a 17% pay raise in his company, but he did not. He got only 3%. And he was complaining about that, and there were reasons for that. And he went to his boss and shared his concern. And one of his concerns was, this is not even close to keeping up to the inflation rate, which is now almost 10%. Well, what is inflation? Can you define it? What happens when the inflation rate goes too high? Well, I did a little research on the internet, since we've all been feeling it and thinking it anyway. And according to the website called The Librarians, which defines certain terms, and a little broader term than Webster's, or a little broader description, The Librarians, rather, website defines inflation this way. Inflation is the devaluation of a national currency due to a rise in the prices of commodities on the national market, often resulting from the rising price of imports. Mild inflation exists in every modern free economy. It is not considered a worrisome phenomena as long as it remains at a very low rate. However, if for political or economic reasons inflation deviates from tolerable levels to the extent that it has a severe negative impact on the standard of living of many citizens, the phenomenon takes on the attributes of a socio-economic disaster that also spurs a political disaster when the nation begins to seek individuals on whom to assign responsibility for the economic collapse. And it's kind of a long definition, I realize, but it was broad enough, I think, to include some of what I want us to think about today. That is, how important is inflation in a prophetic context? After all, we're a spiritual organization and we are concerned with prophecy. I thought it was also interesting that The Librarian's website gives an example of inflation in history that I'd like to share with you, because I think it is a precursor and maybe even reflects what may very well happen in the future in terms of prophecy. The example that The Librarian's website gave was the example of Germany from 1919 to 1933. Let me just read some highlights of the history they rehearsed. Germany from 1919 to 1923 experienced runaway inflation that created the political environment that brought about the rise of Nazism and Adolf Hitler. It began with the German mark being separated from the gold standard, which occurred after World War I. For your information and maybe memory, the United States did the same thing in 1971. We separated our dollar bill from the gold standard, recognizing that in Fort Knox, you didn't need to have a dollar's worth of gold for every dollar that was circulated. What followed next in Germany was paper currency, which could be printed in almost unlimited quantities. Flooding the market with printed money rapidly lowered its value, so that the prices rose disproportionately, while the real wage of salaried workers fell sharply. They go on to explain that this was brought about because after World War I and the defeat of the German army, the Germans were saddled with the responsibility of repairing their war damage and the damage of some of their neighbors who were damaged by the World War I effects of the German invasion. In other words, when you have to repair what was bombed or broken or burned, costs money. Germany was saddled with that responsibility. Therefore, they separated their currency from the gold standard and began to print money to supply the reparations. What happened was that prices rose to absurd sums. At the end of the period of the hyperinflation, in the fall of 1923, a loaf of bread cost many billions, and to send a single postcard from Munich to Prague required stamps worth 36 billion marks. 36 billion marks. At the beginning of this period, a mark was equal to the dollar. In November of 1923, the inflation reached a peak. $1 was worth 4,200 billion German marks. It was clear to all that this trend could go no further. Eventually, a change of government in Germany brought an end to inflation. And we know what that change was. It was the effects of the Great Depression that complicated things, which was a worldwide depression. It brought the Nazi Party to its first real nationwide importance in Germany, because, of course, the Nazis blamed other people for inflation, like the Jews. The rapid rise in unemployment in 1929 through 1930, a contraction of the U.S. of the economy, was about 10%, provided millions of jobless and dissatisfied voters whom the Nazi Party exploited to its advantage. From 1929 to 1932, the party vastly increased its membership and voting strength. Its vote in the elections to the Reichstag increased from 800,000 votes in 1928 to 14 million votes in July 1932. And thus the Nazi Party became the dominant party in Germany, led by Adolf Hitler. Inflation has plagued every economy in world history. Not one has escaped. Let's look at Haggai, the prophet, and what he says about inflation, because it hit ancient Israel. Haggai chapter 1, verse 6. page 1089, for those of you who are still looking for it. Haggai the prophet, small prophet, just after Zephaniah. Haggai chapter 1 and verse 6. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but do not have enough. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes. It's a proverb quoted from Deuteronomy 28 and expounded as a curse, one of the curses that God said would become a part of Israel if they disobeyed him. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but do not have enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes. It's a description of inflation, is what it is. Thus says the Lord of hosts in verse 7, consider your ways, writes the prophet, or says the prophet. Consider your ways, because God associates inflation to disobedience. Consider your ways. It's kind of interesting. I was looking in Scripture and found in Ecclesiastes, I'm not going to turn there, Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 11. It says, when goods increase, they increase that eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? It's like the profit vanishes and disappears. And I think we see that in the cycle of inflationary hyperinflation, which is now affecting the United States. In fact, the entire world. Inflation is a little under 9% here in America. It's almost 12% in Europe. And some nations are even more grossly affected, like Germany. In fact, I was reading in the paper this morning that I get on the internet that Germany now is cutting off gas supplied to commercial businesses for hot water in the bathrooms. Can't even wash their hands in hot water now. They're cutting off water supplied to public fountains. Because they are highly dependent upon Russian gas, as probably all of you know, and the Russians have turned the tap down. They're only allowing 20% of the gas they normally give to Germany through the pipeline. And Germany is very rapidly trying to wean themselves off of Russian gas so they don't have to depend upon that. So we see that, you know, even though we're feeling the pinch here in America, it's far worse in Europe than it is here. Consider your ways, the prophet challenges. Consider your ways, not just spiritually, but physically. Not just physically, but spiritually. So let's look a little bit more at the physical in considering our ways, and then we'll focus on the spiritual, which is the most important, as we shall see. This is from the Euro News, dated July 1st of this year. Soaring energy prices have pushed inflation across the Eurozone to a new high of 8.6% in June. The record-breaking figure, up from 8.1% in May, spells bad news for the European economy, which is currently dealing with several challenges at the same time. Of course, the war in the Ukraine, dwindling supplies of Russian gas, global food insecurity, disrupted supply chains, and the ripple effects from stringent lockdowns in China. Energy continues to be the main driver of expensive prices. I don't know how many of you saw the news this morning, but yesterday, American gas companies like Exxon reported their earnings for the last quarter. If you have stock in Exxon, you know what I'm talking about, because it's increased by several hundred percent their profits in the first and second quarter of this year. Several hundred percent. And you probably noticed, if you were driving to church today, the price of gas has gone down because political pressure has now been applied to the gas companies, and they don't want to get killed, so they're lowering prices. And they are claiming, and it is true to some degree, that there's worldwide pressure on the price of oil, which is going up, partially due to the war in the Ukraine, and Russia is the number two producer of gas and oil in the world. Number one is Saudi Arabia. And that's one of the reasons that our president visited Saudi Arabia recently, I'm sure, was to talk to them about turning up the gas and, the oil supply, so that there would be cheaper prices. Continuing on, talking about the Eurozone, unprocessed food like vegetables and fruit are also experiencing a marked increase in Europe. 11.1% increase as high gas prices turn fertilizers costlier for farmers and producers. No EU country is spared from the pains of inflation, which has never been so high in the history of any single currency. Talking about the euro. The phenomena has become an extremely pressing and intricate challenge for policymakers, companies, and consumers. Last week, this is what the chief economist of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, which supplies financing for countries around the world, this is what he said. The world may soon be teetering on the edge of global recession. The world may soon be teetering on the edge of global recession. Those are very sobering words for not only us in America, but the world. Let's look at another prophecy found in Daniel 11. Daniel 11, in verse 32. Daniel 11, verse 32. I'd like to give this a little bit of context. This is the longest prophecy in the Bible, Daniel 11. It speaks of the king of the north and the south in several different machinations. And at the time of the end, which is the context in which we read in verse 32 through verses 35, actually all the way down to verse 45, is the time of the end. Let's just pick this up. It's talking about persecution first on the church, and then it's talking about the economy and how it plays into the king of the north, beast power mentioned in Revelation. Daniel 11, let's begin in verse 32. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Again, a prophecy about the church at the time of the end, perhaps the prophecies of the two witnesses and the miracles that they will be performing. There may very well be other miracles that will come at the hands of those who are part of God's church during this time period. Verse 33, those of the people who understand shall instruct many. Yet For many days they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and plundering. It seems that at the hand of the King of the North, there will be a persecution of Christians, of the church. This is not unusual. The first century church suffered the same thing. You know, when you look at prophecy and you read about what's coming, sometimes I think a lot of people are attracted to churches today for comfort. Even the Church of God. Hey, let's go there because it's a nice place to meet. They have air conditioning. They have friendly people. They're very accepting. There are kids there, my kids same age. There are young adults there that I want my daughter to marry. And we're just going to live a comfortable life in this church. Well, that's not the prophetic future of God's church. Kind of like our economy, that's temporary. And perhaps even very temporary. And therefore, we have to realize what's really important. Is our comfort level today? What about tomorrow? Notice verse 34, and now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help. Doesn't mean we'll be spared as God's people, but God will give us what we need. But many shall join with them by intrigue. I think when things begin to happen in the world that cause a lot of people to say, wait a minute, what's happening to our economy? What's happening to our world? How come a loaf of bread can be paid for by a wheelbarrow full of money, as it was in Germany in the early 20th century? And then they will say, well, maybe there's an answer there. Maybe there's a word that I've heard in the past. Maybe the Bible has some of the answers, and yet it will be for comfort that they may join the church. And some of those of understanding in verse 35 shall fall. Some will die. I don't know if we thought about it this way, but among the apostles in the first century church, every last one of them died a martyr's death, except John. And he was exiled to an island from which he wrote his epistles and the book of Revelation for us. God did not call them to comfort. In fact, just the opposite. He told Peter, he says, when you're old, you'll go where you don't want to go. You'll be asked to do things you don't want to do. That's your future. Some of those of understanding, verse 35, shall fall to refine them, to purify the rest of us. Will we lose our faith because somebody's martyred? Because somebody falls away? Because it's no longer comfortable? And we have to run? Early Christians had to do that. It's to refine them, to purify them, to make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for an appointed time. Then, verse 36, the king shall do according to his will, talking about the king of the north, the power of the beast. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god. He shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. He will be a successful politician who will bring back economic stability. Think about this for a minute. The beast power. He shall prosper, be successful. For what has been determined shall be done. Verse 37, he shall regard neither the God of the fathers nor the desire of women, that is the pagan gods, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place, he shall honor a God of fortresses, that is strength, and a God which his fathers did not know. It won't be a gold and silver. What are the precious commodities today? Oil, gas. And there's a new one that our ancestors never knew. Data. Have you thought about that? What are they selling now on the internet? My data, your data. Target you with advertising, target me with advertising. People are trying to protect their data today. It has become the new commodity. Who are the top companies that are traded on the NASDAQ? Google? Facebook? It's got a new name now, right? Meta? These are the top commodities, the top of the financial chain that are being traded today. Did the people in Daniel's day know how valuable data was? Would they have considered it a precious commodity? I'd say information. Information is going to be worth money. It's going to be valuable in the future. They could have never imagined, could they? These are the precious things of our world today. And of course, in the foreseeable future, based upon the economies of every country and the industrialization of every industrialized country in the world, what brings the most value? Oil, gas, and technology. That's what it is. What has brought the automobile business in the United States to its knees in the last 2 years? Can't get chips. Because they're all made, at least most of them, perhaps you saw this last week, that Congress passed a bill to pump, 50-some billion dollars into the chip industry to move it back onshore so we don't get caught in that cycle again. But it's going to take, they say, at least 10 years for us to gear up to be able to support our supply chains with our own chips. I mean, the world has changed. Gold and silver is no longer the prize commodity. Other things are more precious. Verse 38, but in their place he shall honor a God of fortresses. What is really strengthening today for somebody leading an economy? And a God which his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Verse 40, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Now, this is interesting when you look at the geography of the Middle East. Who is it who could really irritate a beast power in Europe? Saudi Arabia, maybe? Again, I'm speculating. I don't know. We haven't been able to identify either the king of the north or the king of the south. We just know geographically, if history is a pattern, where they were and where they might be tomorrow. At the time of the end, the king of the south will attack the king of the north, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, the one who's been prospering and has brought back this economy with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through. So the king of the north will sweep down on the king of the south, and he shall also enter the glorious land. We know what that is, the land of Israel today. And many countries shall be overwhelmed. Verse 42, he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall have power over the treasures of what is really valuable. and over all the precious things of Egypt, and also the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall follow in his heels. And he'll succeed because he saves the world from hyperinflation. Not unlike what Hitler did following World War I and creating an environment where he thought he had enough firepower to conquer the nations around him, which generated and started World War II. So what's being prophesied here? Well, as James Carville, in advising President Bill Clinton in 1992, he said, "It's the economy, stupid." It's the economy, stupid. It always has been. It always will be. It's the economy. The economy at the time of the end will be fueling the rise and the success of the beast power. What treasures? Oil and gas and data, technology. We know what the treasures are. We see a little more clearly than the time of Daniel. We see what they could not see. They did not see oil, they did not see gas, and they did not see data or information. That's a relatively new phenomena. Let's go to Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. Daniel 12, 4. "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." I think I've told you before that I used to read this many years ago when I graduated from Ambassador College, and I thought, oh yeah, they're going to print lots of books in the future. Libraries are going to be full of them. I think all of us smile and laugh now because we know how we get knowledge today, don't we? On the way up here, Linda and I were speculating about the mountain ranges on either side of us. And then I asked the question, I said, well, is Mount Shasta in the Sierras or the Cascades? Because we lived in Oregon for many years and the Cascades were to our east. And we could see Mount Hood out at the windows of our house, a beautiful view when you could see it. And that's in the Cascades. And Linda said, well, I think that the Cascades kind of go into the Sierras in California. It's just kind of one long mountain range. So I said, well, let's Google it, right? Our car doesn't have a library in it. Well, yes, it does. It has a phone, right? A smartphone. And she Googled the question in. Do any of you know the answer? Is Mount Shasta in the Cascades or the Sierras? Tom?
In the Cascades.
It is. It's at the tail end of the Cascades. Thank you. Did you look it up on your smartphone? No. You knew that. Okay. I didn't know that for sure until Linda looked it up, and it told us Mount Shasta's in the Cascades. Oh, okay. We have at our fingertips today just about anything you could ever want to know, don't we? Knowledge has increased, hasn't it? We may not keep it all up here. In fact, it's crazy. If I'm going to someone's house, I put in the address and I let my smartphone tell me how to get there. And if I don't have that phone with me, guess what? I can't find my way back there because I don't keep it up here anymore like I used to. I don't do that anymore. I still remember days when I was visiting people in the farm country of Delaware, where I was pastoring a church, and they would say, you know, you go out State 42, and then when you come to the big oak tree, you turn right, you go down about 3 or 4 miles, and when you see the big red barn, you turn left. Yeah, I see a lot of people nodding, you're as old as I am. That's how we give each other directions. Then you come to the country store, and you turn right, and you go down to the fourth driveway, and when you find the black mailbox, that's my place, you turn left, right? That's the way we used to give directions, and I used to write those down on a piece of paper. I don't know how I didn't kill myself driving along, looking down. Oh, yeah, there's the barn. yeah, there's the red. You know, it just, times have changed. But once I went to a place, I could remember how to get back there. And when somebody would say, you know, can you come and visit me? Oh, yeah, you live down there with the black mailbox past the barn and the old oak tree. Yeah, that's us. Not anymore. I use my GPS. Data. Knowledge has been increased, for sure. It has become one of the precious commodities now. Let's go to Revelation. Read more about the prophecies of the end, Revelation chapter 13. Talking about the world's economy of the future. Revelation 13, verse 16. He causes all, it's talking about the beast power at the time of the end, synonymous with what we were discussing earlier in Daniel about the king of the north. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads. People speculate, you know, what is this? Is it a tattoo? Recently people said it's a digital chip that they put in the vaccine and it gets in your arm. Well, they can reduce chips to pretty small. Our dogs have them, but they're not that small that they can go through a syringe. And I've told people who brought me that speculation from time to time and asked me about it, and I say, I don't think they've refined chips to that size. And I said, besides that, they don't need one because you have a smartphone. And they know exactly where you are. They know what you're doing. They know what you're buying. They know where you're going. They know everything about you already. Remember data? That powerful commodity? If you have a cell phone, they already know. They don't need to put a chip in your arm. Eventually, they'll have all that information, whoever they are. A couple of weeks ago, our oldest son visited us, and he's dating a young lady who works for one of the big credit card companies. And she is heading a division, biometric identification. And she's doing it under the guise of security, that using biometric identification, they will be able to keep you from having your accounts broken into and your identity stolen and all that. It'll be worked biometrically. In fact, there's some form of that now. My phone looks at my face and opens up for me, and I don't have to put in my password. But it's going to be more integral than that. And she was trying to explain it to me, but it was way over my head. She's a very smart lady, and she's heading up this division. She's got a team, and she's traveling all over the world talking to representatives from other countries about biometric identification. It's coming. And guess where we will do our banking? Through biometric identification. Now, what form it will eventually take, I don't know. But I don't think, you know, you need a tattoo or a chip in your arm to do it. Anyway, I don't even think it's helpful to speculate too much about that, because it gets us running down pretty narrow limbs on a tree, and it can fall off pretty quickly and disappoint us. But something is coming, and nobody's going to be able to escape except for the grace of God. And I'll explain that in just a moment. Here's wisdom, verse 18. Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of man. His number is 666. You know that old expression, I've got his number? With the help of God's Spirit, We will have the number of the beast, we will know it, and God will help us avoid it. But like I say, that's our next discussion. Let's go to Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1. It's kind of interesting how people try to change the world around us and the outcome of these prophecies. One is the tact that the Catholics and many evangelicals take today, and that is, well, let's change the world around us ourselves and bring about the kingdom of God, and then we won't need Christ. Let's, through political activation and political action committees, let's put into power, you know, people who are Christian, and they will change things. Do we really think that's going to happen? Do we really think that this world is going to change because we put the right guy in the presidency or because we put the right premier in a country? I hope we don't think that. I hope we don't take that tack. Like, I got to get politically involved. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a cancer. Because as we know, it's a global system, isn't it? It has created these problems. Then there are others who think, well, I'll be able to save myself. And I will move out of this state or this country because it's liberal, and I'll go where it's conservative, and I'll survive. And of course, there have always been what we call preppers, right? I stayed with a family in Canada for a while, and they were truly preppers. Didn't realize that till I moved in with them for a while, but the family had sold a farm in the Plains because they had miscalculated when Christ was going to return, and they backed that off 3.5 years, and they thought, well, I can sell this farm, which they sold, and the money that I put in the bank will keep me going until then, and then we'll be taken to a place of safety, and then Christ will return, and I'll be in good shape. Only thing is, when he reached that 3.5 year mark and realized that his bank account was almost drained after selling the family farm, something must be wrong here. Of course, did he blame himself for thinking like a prepper? No, he blamed the church. Thought the church misled him. He eventually left the church. But I remember they had a root cellar where they kept 2-year supply of food. And he kept a gun in there too. And I asked him one day, I said, well, you know, you're going to have a choice someday if this really happens the way you think it's going to happen. You're going to be faced with the fact that people see that you're fat and happy and they're starving to death. And they're going to come knocking on your door. Then are you going to be a Christian or a killer? You going to shoot that person? He dismissed my question, and he's passed now. Things didn't work out the way he thought they were going to work out. For many of those preppers who prepped in the 40s and 50s and built bomb shelters, how helpful was that? Can we beat prophecy? Can we beat the odds? To me, it's kind of like Judas. Judas Iscariot, who wanted things to work out the way he wanted them to work out. And he thought if he could kiss Christ and force Christ to present himself as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and throw off the Roman yoke, if he could facilitate that, he would. It didn't work. He was very disappointed. took his own life. I hope, brethren, we're not preppers. I mean, I hope we're not foolish either, on the other hand, as we'll get to in just a moment. Let's turn to what I believe is a very interesting prophecy. It's found in Luke chapter 1. Well, that's where we were turning anyway, earlier, wasn't it? Luke 1 and verse 68. Luke 1, verse 68. It says in verse 67, his father Zacharias was filled with the Holy Spirit and prophesied. Blessed is the Lord God of Israel, for he has visited and redeemed his people and has raised up a horn of salvation for us. Who is the horn of salvation? And what does that term mean, a horn of salvation? What's going to save us in the future? What horn, if you will, is going to save us? Well, we know that in the context of chapter 1 of Luke, it's talking about Christ and the birth of the Savior. The horn of salvation is Jesus Christ. What's going to save us in the future? The gold bars you've got under your mattress? The year of supply you've got in your container or your storm cellar or your bomb shelter? The only thing that's going to save us in the future, brethren, is our spiritual connection with God. He has raised up a horn of salvation to us in the house of the servant, his servant David, as he spoke by the mouth of his holy prophets who have since before the world began, verse 71, that we should be saved from our enemies and from the hands of all who hate us, to perform the mercy promised to our fathers and to remember his holy covenant. The oath which he swore to our father Abraham to grant us that we, being delivered from the hand of our enemies, might serve him without fear in holiness and righteousness before him all the days of our life. Brethren, what really counts, as one man told me, is that we're prayed up rather than saved up for ourselves for the future. That's the only way we will be saved. I won't turn there, but in Psalms 18, verse 2, it says, the power of the horn is described. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. Psalms 18:2 describes, as is prophesied here, the horn of our salvation is Jesus Christ. It's the return of Christ. That is the answer. That is also our deliverance. You know, oftentimes we as human beings, we want to either fight or flee, right? Human nature. I'll fight it out or run from the problem. And we will find in the future we can do neither. So what can we do to prepare for the coming financial collapse and resurrection by the power of the beast? Let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And verse 38. Matthew 24, verse 38. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and didn't know until the flood came and took them all away. so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Some will think right up until the very end, I'm in this for my comfort. Things aren't as bad as they appear to be. I don't want to be a Jeremiah ad. Talk about all the bad things that are coming, but they will come. So we have a choice. We can either hide our heads in the sand, or we can say, okay, what do I need to do? How do I prepare? They didn't see it in Noah's day, and it was all around them. He says, and two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding in the mill, one will be taken and one will be left. Is the one taken? Taken by God? Is the one left? Left for God to take care of? I think sometimes we've maybe misidentified what's happening in these prophecies. Watch, therefore, verse 42, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. It's not talking about a secret rapture. It's talking about deliverance from God for us. Watch, therefore. The word watch means to be spiritually aware. When we look at what's happening in the world today, we can say, oh, it's just a cycle. Or we can say, this is maybe a precursor. Or maybe this is the beginning. We don't really know, but we need to be aware of what's going on in the world around us and understand that at the bottom of what will happen in the future is the economy. It is the economy, and we need to be aware and prepared for the future. Verse 44, therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. Let's go to Proverbs 22, verse 3. Proverbs 22, verse 3. A prudent man, Proverbs 22, 3, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. Frankly, I like the New Living Translation. It says, Proverbs 22, verse 3, a prudent man foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences, like the people Christ described in the days of Noah would be the same as at the days of the end. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. So what can we do to prepare? Number one is be spiritually aware and prepared. Very clearly. Number two, plan ahead now, because we know it's coming someday, to reduce our standard of living. So it won't surprise us if we have to pay more for a loaf of bread. It's coming. Number one, and most importantly, is be spiritually prepared and aware. Number two is reduce our standard of living. Number three is reduce or get out of debt. Reduce or get out of debt. Economists say, for most people, the only debt you should have is your mortgage and possibly your car payment. Reduce or get out of debt. And number three, save. Save your money while we can, because a rainy day is coming and you may need that savings. How can we prepare? Number one, be spiritually ready and prepared. Be close to God. Don't get caught up in the speculation or politics or prepping or the other distractions that exist out there. They will disappoint, no doubt. Number two is reduce our standard of living. Become accustomed to the idea of living smaller, not larger. Number three is reduce and get out of debt. Number four is save while you can. I share these 4 points with you because I heard them in a sermon 40 years ago. Good advice, really good advice that applied then and it applies now. Let's go to Ephesians 6. In case you're wondering, that sermon was given by Herbert W. Armstrong. Now, I don't think we should live by every word that he said, because he was a man. We should live by every word that this Bible says. But I thought he gave some sound advice. I wrote it down. I haven't always lived by it, I must confess. But as time goes on, longer and longer, Linda and I try to live by those principles. Ephesians 6 and verse 16. Above all, see what's most important? Point number one, above all, taking the shield of faith. What is our shield of faith? It is not that God's going to just suddenly take all those hardships away from us. No, the shield of faith is confidence in Jesus Christ to fulfill his promises, to supply our needs, and to give us eternal life at his return. Above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. It's very confusing out there today, isn't it, the landscape? What do we do? How do we react? How do we act? And yet, if we have a biblical foundation and we stay close to God and what his word says, above all, taking the shield of faith to fight all those confusing and conflicting ideas. Let's go back to verse 12. Ephesians 6, 12. Exactly how do we do that? We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. That's the time of the end. And having done so, to stand. Stand, therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your own feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the devil. That you may be able to stand at the last day. That's our goal, is to be able to stand before God as we are resurrected and he says to us, well done, good and faithful servant, because you put me first. Because you put me first, because you put God first, because the number one responsibility that we have for the future and to prepare for that evil day is to put God first in our lives and then work on reducing our standard of living, getting out of debt, and save. To prepare for that evil day because it is coming. And the most important thing for us to prepare for that is to be prepared spiritually.